All right, we can get started. Would you pray with me, please? Father, as we talk today about the strange new world in which we live, I ask God that you would guide our discussion in ways that are honoring to you and that bring out truth and that help us to know how we can better love and connect with and share the gospel with those in the world around us. God, I pray that you'd grant us a spirit of humility to recognize when certain ideas from the culture have infiltrated our own thoughts. I pray that you'd help us to just have much wisdom and insight into what's going on around us that we can best be lights and best represent you to this world. We ask in Jesus' name, amen. All right, well, welcome. I'm glad you guys all came. In case you did not already get one, I encourage you to pick up a handout. There's some back there and some back there. So we're going to, for the next 6 or 7 weeks or so, go through a class called Strange New World, based on a book by Carl Truman, which I'll introduce in a few minutes. But let me just start with this question. Just think broadly. What do you find strange about the world, the current world in which we live? Yes, Carol?
The cultural speed at which all this stuff is happening.
You're exactly right. In fact, this book that I'm going through, I actually wonder, like, is now the right time to do this book, or should I wait until next year? And I realize if I wait until next year, it's probably already out of date. Yes, things are changing fast. What else? Yes, Steve.
Supreme Court justice can't define what a woman is.
Yeah, okay. The Supreme Court cannot define what a woman is. Okay, people are accepting things as fact, as truth, which are clearly not fact or truth. Yes?
It's no longer okay just to accept sin and say, okay, fine, if you want to do it, fine, but like now we have to celebrate.
Okay, so it's no longer okay to just sort of be tolerant and say you can do it that if you want or whatever, but now we have to celebrate it. We have to affirm it. That's right. Yes?
Science doesn't really seem to add up.
Okay, so science doesn't feel like science anymore. Yeah, it doesn't add up. That's right. There was a hand back there. Was that Lynn?
Truth is optional.
Truth is optional. Yes. Kathy? Where did the world that I grew up in go? That's right. Yes, Dan?
Doing the right things can get you into trouble. I just signed up to substitute teach, and you would not believe what sexual... abuse can be.
Yeah. So doing right things can get you in trouble. Sure. One more, Chris.
Now it's legal in Canada for teenagers to go have themselves killed.
Yes. That's right. Some laws in Canada allow, assisted suicide, even for minors at some points. Yes. So lots of things are going on in the world that just make it very strange. Yeah, you guys mentioned some of them, right? Other things like the insistence on using preferred pronouns, changes in who can use different restrooms, all those kinds of things are going on. The world is changing, and it is changing, as you said, very rapidly. So on the top of page one on your handout, here's a bit of a scenario that he describes, another way of putting it that aligns with what you guys have been saying already. For many people, the Western world in which we now live has a profoundly confusing and often disturbing quality to it. Things once regarded as obvious and unassailable virtues have in recent years been subject to vigorous criticism and even, in some cases, come to be seen by many as more akin to vices. Indeed, it can seem as if things that almost everybody believed as unquestioned orthodoxy the day before yesterday, that marriage is to be between one man and one woman, for example, are now regarded as heresies advocated only by the dangerous lunatic fringe. That's us. Nor are the problems confined to the world out there. Often, they manifest themselves most acutely and most profoundly within families. Parents teaching their family traditional views of sex find themselves met with incomprehension by their children, who have absorbed far different views from the culture around them. The result is often confusion and sometimes even heartbreak, as many of the most brutal engagements in the culture war are played out around the dinner table and at family gatherings. So, just asking you, so you don't have to share all personal details about your family. I also want to remind you, these classes are recorded. but if you're willing to share, in your personal relationships or just observations, maybe difference between generations, how have you encountered some differences of beliefs and attitudes in matter of sex and sexuality? He talks about how it's not just out there, right? I mean, this is very personal stuff that affects what goes on in our home, our immediate family, our extended family, our friends at workplace. How have you encountered some of these differences? Lynn?
It seems like one of the big ones is that homosexuality is something that you're born with.
Okay. Right, so homosexuality, you're born with it, is completely okay. That's one of the key things. It's completely okay.
I would take it even farther. It's not just that it's okay. It's completely morally and societally equivalent to heterosexuality.
Right, so it's not just okay. It's equivalent. No difference. No difference at all. Okay? Yes?
That growing up with people around me that were, because it wasn't acceptable at that time, they were constantly trying to commit suicide, unsuccessfully all the time. But now it's an open thing, so it's don't commit suicide.
Okay. So actually, the not committing suicide is a good part of that. Yes. So that would be a good thing that has happened. Anyone else that has, but it shows a shifting value of it. Anything else where you guys have counted differences? Yes, Susan. Yeah, so that's actually an interesting point where he talks about how it's often around your dinner table discussions where it's felt most painfully. You're pointing out that actually those discussions are now often, can you say off the table at the dinner table, but you can't even talk about them, right? Yeah, you can't even talk about some of these things. Yes, Kathy.
The description of non-binary has come up as one of our grandkids has declared that he's non-binary and married a couple years ago, so I'm not sure exactly where to go with that.
Okay. Yeah, so it can be really hard to know how to respond to some of those things. Yes. One more hand I think I saw. Okay, well, let's go on. So we're going to talk about some of these things as we go through this class. The main core book that we're going to be using is Strange New World by Carl Truman. I do have about 8 copies of it. If you're interested, you can stop and buy a copy at the end of class. So that's the book that I'm sort of basing my ideas on. Now, Truman has become a very widely regarded kind of scholar in what's going on in understanding the culture around us. I will say his book, if you read through the book, there's not a lot of Bible verses in it, so we're going to supplement his book with a bunch of Bible verses because we want to see what Scripture has to say. But it's just a book that I would highly recommend to help us understand what is going on in the culture around us. And that book actually is a condensed form of a book that he wrote a couple years ago, Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self. Now, this book is about 400 pages long. It's very, academic. It's difficult to read. But this is the book that sort of put Carl Truman on the map in terms of being recognized as somebody who understands what's going on in the culture. And then, thankfully, some people said to him, hey, this is a great book with some great ideas that the American people need to understand, but no one's going to read this. And so he was asked to condense it down to Strange New World, which is about a third of the size. So it's much more accessible. Also, this book was written pre-COVID. This book was written post-COVID. And there's just been some additional shifts in our culture through then. So it was only just published just earlier this year, 2022, I mentioned, somebody's talked about the rapid rate of change. So it is up to date, only a few months old, but it might actually be out of date within a few years. But I would really recommend both those books. I do have a few copies of Strange New World, but not the other one. But But if you really like studying those things in depth, Strange New World would be, or sorry, Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self would be a key book to get. Now, actually, so you can see the subtitle here, Strange New World, How Thinkers and Activists Redefined Sexual Identity and Sparked the Sexual Revolution. So I'll be honest, when I first saw that book, the title, I'm like, that's a really long title. That's unnecessary. I don't want to think about all that. But then I went back and looked at the title, and actually that subtitle, How Thinkers and Activists Redefined Identity and Sparked the Sexual Revolution, is actually a really great subtitle to his book that sort of defines and helps us understand exactly what he thinks happened in the past decade. So as you just look at that subtitle there, How Thinkers and Activists Redefined Identity and Sparked the Sexual Revolution, what can you discern from that about what Truman believes regarding the state of the world? What do you notice? Yes.
It was started by a group of people who had a way of thinking, and they promoted it slowly.
Yes.
And it gradually took hold in a way that we didn't identify, and now it's reached critical mass.
That's exactly right. So it started really with people who just had some ideas and started promoting it, and it kind of slowly grew in a way that I think a lot of us didn't recognize what was going on. And it just grew and grew till it became what it is today. Anything else you notice about that?
My question is, can we rethink that? Can we go back to?
So that actually is a great point, which actually, if you think about the subtitle, it should give us hope, right? Because it shows that the world in which we live is the result of certain people thinking a certain way, sharing those ideas, kind of promoting those ideas. Eventually, it took hold and adjusted the culture. Why can't we be a part of undoing it and shifting things the other way? So there is hope there in it. Yes. Jeremy.
The word redefined sticks out to me, and that like definitions shouldn't really change.
Yes. So that concept is something we're going to talk a lot about. He redefined identity, or these people redefine identity, and that's going to be the core of what goes on in this class, is that they have taken the concept of who I am and they have redefined it so that it no longer means what it once meant. And people no longer think of themselves the way they used to. Yes?
I think I'm confused with the sexual revolution. I think I'm old enough to have lived through the last sexual revolution in the 60s and 70s. And I'm sure the 20s was the sexual revolution. I'm sure, you know.
Right. So great point. So he's gonna broaden the concept of sexual revolution. He's going to say what you think of it happened in the 60s, that's only a small part of a much bigger sexual revolution that actually spans centuries. Yes?
I remember years ago in the 80s, Josh McDowell speaking a lot, and he said then that the new virtue was going to be tolerance. In the 80s, he said that. Of course, we've gone beyond that.
Right, so we have definitely gone beyond tolerance to acceptance. Okay, so yeah, so all those things. Yeah, thinkers and activists, right? So you have philosophers, people who have ideas, they're promoting things. They redefined identity. They changed the concept of who we are, how we think of ourselves in the world. That then sparked a sexual revolution, and that has led us to where we are today. So those are the things that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about identity and what that meant for the sexual revolution, how it led to the current world. So here's another way of changing all that, saying that course goal. So we're going to try to better understand how a changing concept of self, right, that's your identity, a changing concept of self has led to this strange new world in which we now live, and to consider what Scripture teaches about how we should respond. And so you can see at the bottom of page one a couple of values that I want us to carry as we go into this class. One, I don't want it to be about bashing the culture. Okay, that's not really helpful. We're not here to condemn the world. Yes, what's happening is sin. We don't want to condone it. It's not okay, but it's not our goal to just sit here and talk about how bad things are in the world, right? Our goal is to figure out how can we best reach the world with the gospel of Christ. And so in order to do that, we need to understand how the world thinks. What do they value? How do they reason? How do they come to their conclusions? And how can we engage with them, right? So I want us to try to avoid all the bashing and condemnation. Yes, it is sin, but our goal is to get to how can we understand them so that we can share the gospel with them. Second thing I will hope that we all do is, as we think about these issues, a couple of things. One, we need to recognize every single one of us, because of sin, is somehow broken with our own view of ourself and with our understanding of sexuality. Okay, so we're all broken somehow. The other thing I would say is, so we're talking about philosophies that are out there in the world, understanding of who we are, understanding of sex and self and identity that are out there in the world. So we swim in a certain culture. There's no way at all that you and I have not been tainted by those very philosophies and ideas that we say we reject. Okay? We have absorbed some of these values and ideals from the world into our own thinking, probably without recognizing it or realizing it. Okay, so as we go through this course, I think we should be asking ourselves, we'll talk a little bit about this today, have I adopted some of these philosophies unknowingly? I think we have a tendency to assume we've got it figured out, we think biblically, everyone else is wrong. We probably have absorbed some of these ideas. So I want us to carry a bit of humility as we go into this course. So we're going to start, this is the top of page 2, by talking about self. So the first thing that's going on, Carl Truman says, remember, there's a changing concept of self. So we need to get that word down because we're going to talk a lot about that. So here's what he would say, is that the idea of self has changed drastically over the past maybe decades or centuries. And here's how he defines self. This is a quote from his book. He says, when I use the word self, term self, in this book, I am referring to the deeper notion of where the real me is to be found. The modern self assumes the authority of inner feelings and sees authenticity as defined by the ability to give social expression to the same. The modern self assumes that society at large will recognize and affirm this behavior. Right? It's not just tolerance, it's also affirmation of this behavior. In short, the modern self is one where authenticity is achieved by acting outwardly in accordance with one's inward feelings. So, to help understand that a little bit, if you were to go back maybe decades, maybe even some of you, if someone was to ask you the question, who are you? Who are you? So, in years past, people would have often answered that question with, you know, things like, well, I'm an American. I'm from Cottonwood. I'm a husband. I'm a father. You know, maybe your last name. Well, I'm a Bredo, right? I'm a pastor. You define it often in terms of these external values, external truths, and external relationships. I'm a member of such and such a church, right? Those are the kinds of things that it would have been. You would have looked outwardly to these external truths and your external relationships, and those outward things would have defined who you are. I'm a man, right? These truths, those outward things. Today, it has shifted where if you were to ask many people in our culture today, who are you, those external truths, those objective realities are not what they would use to define themselves. They would be more likely to say things, well, I'm a person who prefers this. I'm a person who likes this. I'm a person who loves this. I'm a person who believes this. And what shifted is that the modern self no longer looks outward to define themselves. It now looks inward, to their own preferences, their own desires, their own drives, their own ambitions. And those kind of things then define, in their mind, who they are. And so that is a shift. We no longer define ourselves by outward things. We now define ourselves by looking inward. And you'll notice this part right here, this is a key thing. It assumes the authority of inner feelings. So those are the most important thing about me. My feelings define who I am. And those, that's where truth is found. You'll also notice it says the role of society is to not only recognize, but to affirm this behavior. So going on a little bit farther. So the idea of self, we're going to talk a lot about self. Here's another phrase that we're going to use a lot in this class is expressive individualism. Expressive individualism, which is that each individual must be free to express their own feelings. So expressive individualism holds that each person has a unique core of feelings and intuition that should unfold or be expressed if individuality is to be achieved. So basically, individual expression is you look inside, figure out who you are, And you then have to be free to express it. You hear it in phrases like, be true to yourself, follow your heart, find yourself, right? You do you. Those kinds of things are all about expressive individualism. Looking inside ourselves to figure out who we are and then expressing it. Without, this would be another key difference, without really assuming that there's potentially something inside me that needs to change. Without considering that there's a potential for something inside me that might be wrong. Whatever's in there is true, what I feel is right, and I must be free to express that. Molly.
It's often said, well, that's your truth, as if there's more than one truth, and my truth is equal to your truth.
Yes, that's your truth. Yes.
As Christians, doesn't that actually bring us into a real positive place in this culture? Because as Neil Anderson said 30 years ago when I did one of his studies, I am not a wife and a mother. I am a child of God. I am all the things that God says I am is who I am. And so if we describe ourselves or believe our beliefs, then our reality, our truth is as relevant as any of those other, you know, weird feelings or other feelings.
Yeah, so you get at something about where we as believers should find our true identity. But what you're describing, which is true, is still an external truth. It is God telling you who you are. And you recognize him.
Inside me telling you what I am.
Okay. I say, so Holy Spirit inside you affirming what God has told you who you are. Yes. But yes, that's how we define ourselves. Okay.
So this is just really contradictory in that we build up communities, our society is based on communities, which are all those external truths you talked about, because they supported our survival. Like, we do better together than we do on our own against nature and against hardships. And so this part where it says, assumes the authority of inner feelings and that society at large will recognize and affirm this behavior. So the assumes the authority of inner feelings is pulling me and pulling society and communities apart. Because it's not saying we're doing things for the betterment of society. We're doing things for the betterment of me. And yet we want everybody else to support that, which is what communities do. But we're acting to the antithesis of what a community does.
Right. So you're making a fatal mistake in all this, which is assuming that there's some rationality to it.
Why we're so, you know, one of the loneliest societies ever.
Yeah. All right. So we'll work on that idea some more. One other phrase I want you to get, a culture of authenticity. So we're talking about individual self, expressive individualism. So that has become the norm in Western society, right? And that has then created this push for this culture of authenticity, which Taylor has defined as one where each of us has his or her own way of realizing our humanity. And it's important to find and live out one's own, that's how the quote ends, but I think you would mean find and live out one's own identity as against surrendering to conformity with the model imposed on us from outside by society or the previous generation or religious or political authority, right? Do you see that last idea? So it is the idea of saying, I'm going to reject what society has said. I'm going to reject what previous generations have done. I'm going to reject religious authority. I'm going to reject political authority. I'm going to look inside me and find myself, and I'm going to live that out. And we want to create a culture where everyone is free to do that. So really the role of society in this view is the main purpose of society is to affirm me in my own pursuits. So we're going to, as we go through this course, in the next few weeks, we're going to talk about how we arrived at these points. But this is the main idea of this book, is that the concept of self has changed, and that has led to other things. So let me just ask another question. So as we talk about this expressive individualism, where I need to be free to express what I discover inside, where do you see that in our culture today? Think secular culture. Where do you see that?
The schools.
In schools, for example?
Expressing who they are and who they want to be.
Yeah, so the schools are going to encourage that. So, yes?
Well, you're not other churches.
It's in church is one. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Yes.
Just the contention, because everybody is expressing themselves, and no one else can impose anything on them.
Everyone's expressing themselves. No one can impose it. If you say something against me expressing myself, you are bad.
I think social media is an outlet for this, unlike anything we've ever seen in history.
Yeah, social media has definitely allowed for this.
Our government. Yeah.
For example.
Well, for example, the president just had an interview with a teen that feels he's going to be a mom, and their agenda is pushing that.
So you see the government and some other sectors of society encouraging this and pushing it.
Talking when my kids said there's a school, and the it wasn't allowed for the teacher to have like an example of the arts and crafts things that they were making. They were making owls, so then there was no example to show the kids what it was. They weren't allowed to have that because they wanted everyone to be able to just be free. So then only one owl even resembled closely because the eyeballs were down here and the feet were up here because they didn't know. So it's interesting because all of them were free expression, but then none of them look like an owl.
Free expression, doesn't look like an owl. Yeah. Yes.
The breakdown of people as a society of what we used to hold firm to in order to make somebody else feel better about themselves. So in other words, you take young children in the school today and have a football team which used to be predominantly men or young boys, and now you're allowed to have females join the team and participate in the bathrooms, getting dressed, and you lose your own individuality to accept another's thoughts or beliefs.
Right, and you make this comment, it's about making others feel good about themselves, and you're even seeing this, so then I think a changing definition of love, whereas a biblical definition of love is more about doing what's best for the other person, which is sometimes in correction. The current definition of love is making people feel good about themselves. Yes?
Another place where I see it is in professional sports, where there's sort of the exhibitionism of if you score a point or get a touchdown, it's the big showy celebration that's all centered on me, even as opposed to or against the team.
The team, okay, good.
So I'm thinking, like, there's a book I'm going to start reading aloud in the next month called Badger Clause that was written in the 70s that promotes this. I mean, like, it's really subtle in our culture. This book promotes this boy who defies the culture of the tribe in which he lives, and he goes into, he hides in a meeting of the braves. And then he has a consequence, but he survives a consequence. So really, in the book, his actions against the society end up being applauded in the end. Mm-hmm. And like, that's an old book. And until I sat here today, I thought, well, this, it's great. It tells a lot about the culture of that tribe, and that helps the kids understand that. But it really is promoting this.
Yeah, so a lot of movies and stories today are about an individual rising up against society and culture around them, and it's celebrated.
And we just, at least for me, it's accepted that that's our culture. That's kind of the American dream, actually.
Yeah, so there are it's an aspect to what we'll talk about in that where we ended up with is in some ways
the
inevitable outcome of some of the American values. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, I want to go on and just ask this question before watching the video. Is expressing individualism always bad? Why not? Matt?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this the whole time we've been responding, because I think there's definitely positive aspects to expressive individualism, and our American culture right now is taking it way too far in a direction that is ignoring truth and has a wrong definition of love, but I think in many cases in the church, and even in this church, we go to the opposite extreme, and we just can only think of ourselves as always only bad, and we just need to be corrected. And the sermon on Sunday morning should be all about, oh, pastor really got me this Sunday, and all that kind of thing. And maybe I'm especially sensitive to that, but that doesn't mean that people who would rather be beat up on Sunday are right. I think that it's good to be able to say what is good about oneself. I mean, God said that we were good. In fact, we're the only thing in all of creation where he said it was very good. And we're valuable enough for him to die for us. So I think knowing ourselves and being able to express that is important. But it's also important to be able to be corrected when we're wrong.
Right, and I think that would be a key thing. So yeah, I mean, you know, God made all of us different, right? We're not all cookie cutter, you know, images, the same thing. We each have our own personality, we each have our own character, we each have our own gifts, we each have our own roles, and, you know, we should look to those sort of things, and we should be glad for that, and live out who God intended us to be. But that needs to be understood in context that this is who God made me, this is how God shaped me, this is where God put me. This is how I can use my gifts for the good of others. And as you say, be corrected. So it's not, it's definitely not all bad. There is a place for looking inside and saying, hey, who has God made me to be? But I think expressive individualism would leave out that part about who did God make me to be, understanding there is an external factor that shapes who you are. Molly?
If you have to affirm everybody being different, you're destroying the family. You're destroying any group that's unified, like the church. We come under submission of the elders. And if you're going to have to accept me for who I am, with everybody in here, there's no unity.
Right. We will end up destroying structures if we take it too far. Ellen?
The teacher in me kind of comes out and making tests, or the word always gives away what the answer should be. So it's obviously no, it's not always bad. And in fact, a lot of times trying to express yourself, who you are as an individual is a lot of times good. But yeah, in today's society, well, I think like Matt said, it's gone too far.
It's gone too far. It's Melanie.
Yeah, it reminds me about, like, of my kids being really different and how I delight in that as a parent. Like, I don't want my kids to be this is what this kid is doing, so I'm going to do all those things, and those are all my same interests. Like, I totally delight in them having different personalities, having different interests, and yet there's an overarching, like, divine order of, like, but we are all going to be responsible. We are all going to be respectful. And so I feel like the expressive individualism is necessary in order for us to live with the variety and the uniqueness that God gave us and wants for us and for us to really thrive. And yet, when we take it to the point where we are now God and we are the one deciding what that all looks like and there's no overarching divine authority, then it gets really out of control and negative.
Right, so I think that would be a key thing where the world's idea of expressive individualism has taken out the authority structures. You know, as I said, it strips your family authority, it strips scriptural authority, it strips them away to the point where those are no longer factors in understanding who I am and how I'm supposed to express myself in this world.
Maybe it's not expressive individualism, since you defined that before, but isn't it also healthy when we look inside to see the things that we're struggling with so that we can get help? I mean, you know, if kids don't express to their parents that they are struggling with their identity or whatever, then their parents can't help guide them. If we just keep all that stuff hidden, you know, don't confess our sins one to another, don't do some of the things that the Bible tells us to do, isn't that part of expressive individualism too?
So I don't know if that exactly fits with the definition of expressive individualism as it's defined in this course, but you're absolutely right. We want people to express their feelings and what they're struggling with so that they can get help. Terry?
No, sorry. She kind of hit on what I was going to say. Was, isn't there a fine line sometimes between expressive individualism and a cry for help? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so combined with the practical, is where it would be a good thing, as opposed to just saying, this is who I am. I'm not gonna tell you. All right, I'm gonna go on. I know we can keep talking. So I want us to watch a video. It's about 8 minutes. So you're gonna see Carl Truman here. So honestly, the first few minutes talks about some things. I don't know, I almost consider skipping the first few minutes, but I'll just show them for context. The last part of it was a little bit better as it begins to go into idea of sexual identity. Just so you know, he is British, so he sometimes uses examples from Britain, but he would say also, because he's lived in America for a long time, that gives him an opportunity to observe American culture a little bit as an outsider.
Many of you will be aware of a book by Aldous Huxley, Brave New World, which is his story of a dystopian future for humanity. When you see the title of my book, Strange New World, it should be fairly obvious that I'm playing on Aldous Huxley's title. Except my book is not addressing the future. My book is addressing the world in which we now find ourselves. Many of us who grew up in, say, the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, find the world in which we now live to be a strange and alien one to that which we experienced as children. Even our children today might experience the world as strange to that which they knew just a couple of years ago. It seems very hard to believe, for example, that a mere 15 years ago, equivocating on gay marriage could have been electoral suicide at the polls in the United States of America. And yet now, any objections to something such as transgenderism could finish a career in public life. We live in a strange new world, and what I want to think about is why and how is that world so strange? And there are a number of things I think that contribute to that. First of all, and perhaps most difficult to articulate, is the incredible feeling of speed and change that many of us have about the environment in which we live. So little today seems to be constant. Everything seems to be constantly changing in a state of flux. Things that were certain just yesterday are being denied today. Why is it that the world in which we live gives us this feeling of vertigo, of dizziness, as we try to find something that might give us some level of continuity between yesterday, today, and tomorrow? The speed of change is dramatic and is frightening. Secondly, many of us have noticed over the last few years that everything in our world has become political. The old days where we would have organizations like, say, the Boy Scouts, or the local church, or the Girl Guides, or the Women's Institute, some organizations that didn't have a strongly political dimension to them, seem to have disappeared. Everything is now political. You may notice, for example, during Pride Month, how many big corporations in America sent you emails, if you're on their emailing list, assuring you of their support for Pride Month, assuring you of their support for various social and political causes. That's strange. It's strange, isn't it, that an institution like Amazon, that just sells stuff, goes out of its way to tell you how politically engaged it is. And it's disturbing, because it increasingly means that everything we say and do is subjected to political scrutiny. Everything we say and do identifies us somehow in the public square and makes us vulnerable to criticism. And we might connect to that the other strange thing that many of us are experiencing in the world today, and that is the collapse of the distinction between the public and the private. I remember growing up in Britain in the 1980s, and there was a clear distinction between public life, what one did, say, at work or at school, and what one did in the home. The latter was private, it was secret, only family members knew about it. And yet now we live in a world where the public and the private are increasingly blurred, the boundary between them has become increasingly dissolved, so that opinions you hold, even opinions that you express in a private context, may have public consequences for you. You might find yourself in trouble for something that you said you thought in a completely private and personal context, but which comes back to haunt you. And then there's the issue of sex.
Isn't it strange how sex, once considered a very private activity between two individuals, has become one of the most pressing public issues of our day? And isn't it strange how sex has come to dominate our notions of identity, has come to grip the imagination? Think of the acronym LGBTQ. Think of what that says about the way we think of ourselves. It means that we've come to identify our sexual desires with who we are at a very deep and foundational level. Perhaps some of you have had the heartbreak of a child or a relative coming to you and saying, we think we're gay or we think we're bi. And they may never have had a sexual experience, but the very fact they experience certain desires deeply shapes how they think of themselves and how they think of their identity. And what I suggest in my book and what I want to tease out in these lectures and in the study guide is that underlying all of these things is the sense of the human self. There is something that binds together the chaos of our current world. There is something that provides unity and coherence to the way we experience the apparent chaos and change and flux around us. And that's the changing notion of the human self. Today, we tend to think of the self as self-creating. We tend to think of the self as unhitched, unhinged from any constant thing around us, and rooted entirely in our self-consciousness. We might put it this way. In times past, when you'd ask somebody who they were, they might have told you they were the son of somebody, or they belonged to a certain nation. They did a certain job. They had a certain. They belonged to a certain family. They would have described themselves, we might say, in terms of their obligations to and dependence upon other people. The way we think of ourselves today is very often as autonomous, as free-floating, as determining ourselves. And that can be a very attractive idea in some ways, because it plays to our intuitions of freedom. It plays to our desire to be free, to determine who we are in and of ourselves. And yet when you think about it, when you extrapolate that to your view of life as a whole, it's also a very frightening prospect, because it means the only constant thing in this world is you. And that everything else that exists sort of exists in a kind of adversarial relationship to you. And then when you throw into the mix things like technology that profoundly shape the way we experience the world on a day-to-day basis, and the way technology is constantly changing and therefore constantly reshaping that experience, that can be very worrying and profoundly disorienting. And what I want you to think about at this point is how that contrasts with the biblical teaching of self. What I mean by self here is not the understanding that you're you and I'm me. I mean an understanding of what it means to be a human being, how we find our identity, how we find our purpose in life, how we find our meaning. Contrast the independent, free-floating self of today with the teaching of the Bible. Think about human beings made in the image of God. Think about how the identity of Adam and Eve was actually grounded in something external to themselves. It was grounded in God. It was grounded in his image. Think about that statement where God looks down and he sees Adam all on his own and he thinks that it's not good for Adam to be alone. What is God saying there? Is he perhaps saying that Adam only finds his completion and fulfillment when he stands in relation to another one of his own kind who is the same but different, in an interesting and significant way? Think about the way the biblical narrative develops the account of humanity. Think about human beings, particularly the people of Israel, when God brings his law to them, when God gives them his commands. Right at the heart of those commands is that the people of Israel are to be hospitable. To be hospitable to who? To their neighbors, to the sojourner, to the stranger in the midst. Why are they to do that? It's because God is a hospitable God. In other words, God is defining human beings at all levels as those who are dependent upon and have obligations to others. So one of the things I want you to do at the end of this first lecture is to think about that. Think about how you think about yourself. Think about how you think about job satisfaction, how you think about your family, how you think about your relationship to others, and ask yourself, how much of that modern understanding of the self that places me at the center, makes me independent, that makes me self-defining, stands at odds with the basic definitions of selfhood and the basic history of selfhood that we find in the biblical narrative of the people of God, made in God's image and ultimately redeemed in the Lord Jesus Christ.
Any comments or questions on that? Can we get the lights back up? Chris.
Oh, it was great. I mean, you really summed it up well. The only thing I'm seeing today, which is just insanity, is now it's gone to a whole other level. Now it's robots. And I'm watching Japan selling fembots to men because it's easier than getting married to a woman.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the hell is going on in this world, right?
Yes.
I always have to think of the word moderation. You know, 30% of your diet is meat. That's maybe, for instance, that's better than 100%. If 30% of what I think about myself is true, maybe I'm okay. If I think it's 95%, I'm full of it. Sometimes, if I ask my wife, I'm only 5%. Maybe even less than that. But it's that whole idea that it's as difficult as anything to stand there and look at what you're thinking and say, is this true or is it not? And this whole thing of thinking, well, I'm 14 and I'm not sure whether I'm a boy or a girl, I should change my body. That's so profound that if you stand back and look at that, you'd say, well, it's obvious I'm full of crap. So there's a phrase.
Okay.
Full stuff.
There's a question over here, a comment. Okay. Yeah, so, you know, one of the things he talks in there about is finding your identity in a way that's detached or unhinged from what's going on. So we do have an identity, and there is a place for looking inside for that, but we need to find that in relation to what's going on around us. So we talked a little bit about this, but where do you see aspects of the philosophy of expressive individualism penetrating into the church? I mean, this is the culture in which we live. Do you see it coming into the church in any way? Molly?
Churches.
Okay, so you see some of those values, churches that would accept some of these truths. What about, let's say, neighborhood?
No, it's not expressed.
But do you see aspects of expressive individuality, expressive individual coming into the church at all?
I probably would say the approach that I've had to fight coming to church is, what am I personally going to get from
this
church? What am I going to feel when I worship and go to song? What am I going to experience in terms of conviction, rather than, I guess, supplementing that with, how can I come and offer my worship to God? How can I come and serve my brothers and sisters? How can I come and be a part of this community, kind of finding my place in that? Because I have a unique role, but it also is a community, and it also is a duty and obligation to everybody else and to God. I come and worship.
Yes, so you're thinking of your experience more, it's detached from everyone around you. What am I going to get? How am I going to feel? Is it going to affirm me and make me feel the way that I want to feel? Will I leave feeling affirmed a certain way? And if not, maybe I should find another church.
Like bringing kids to church, young kids to church, is not easy. It's a sacrifice within itself.
Okay.
Like, to come and show that it is an important thing as a family.
Do you want your kids to understand that? Yeah.
I think it's easier than it used to be to see like biblical norms and commands and go, well, that's not really my gift. That doesn't really fit with my personality. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and just not engage the comprehensive biblical norms.
Okay, yeah, so it's easy to look at certain biblical commands, certain biblical traditions, and say, that's not my personality. That's not really me. I'm going to go do my own thing. I think you see it in, you know, where scripture would tell us to gather together with others. People would say, well, I find God out in nature, right? That's who I am, so I'm gonna go do that, sort of thing. Yes?
And I see the opposite of that
it's not as far as an individual, as far as pastors, I'm talking, as far as a group of individuals, of pastors, that, and I know people do things to abide by the law, but I am still mad, and I hope it never ever happens again, that we shut down the church because the government tells us to do it. I'm just irritated about that. And I know we had to do what we had to do, but
yes.
It's just, it penetrated, you know, what my beliefs were as a new believer, basically, for only, 15, 16 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was like, they've taken everything else. Why have they taken that away? And the church went along with it. And I'm still fuming over it, and I hope it never, ever happens again.
So I'd love to talk about that, because it's a bit more complicated than just doing what they said. But yeah, you're okay. Yes.
I see aspects of especially political ideologies as expressive individualism penetrating the church. A lot of and not just this church, but especially nationwide. There's a lot of marrying of political ideologies with Christianity that I find particularly unhelpful because it obscures the gospel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, we talked, or one of the ideas in the class is that almost everything has become political, and that's probably come in some unhealthy ways. Brian?
Isn't neighborhood church kind of expressively individualistic? As a body. I mean, we're non-denominational.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So as a church, we've said we don't want to be a part of some other larger organization telling us what to do or what to believe. We want to figure it out ourselves. Okay. Sure. Interesting thought. Yeah. Yes, Chris.
I see more and more in the church today, the individuals that are leading the church, the pastors, are more, it's our way or the highway. If you don't like it, leave or stop paying. And when I've heard that, I've asked other people attend churches, is that what you hear at your church? Oh yeah, absolutely. If you don't like the way they do things, you can leave or stop paying. It's we're doing it. And we're not really asking you, we're doing it. Mm-hmm. We might tell you about it after the fact, but we're doing it. And it's not just our church, it's happening everywhere. And that really surprises me.
Okay. Any other ways you see it? Anybody see it in themselves? You're willing to share?
No. I can relate to a lot of the things that have been said. I see that
in yourself.
Yeah. Like what Calvin said earlier. Uh-huh. Especially, I do. I do care about what I get out of Sunday morning.
Yeah. Right. But I can give you. So I'm an introvert, which means I love you all. But I do best one-on-one or in small groups, right? It'd be really easy for me to look inside myself and see, well, this is who I am. I'm an introvert. I like small groups of people. And so what would be best for me is to not come to a Sunday gathering because, you know, there's a lot of people there. Right? But Scripture says, no, you need to gather with other people. You benefit from the larger body. And so, honestly, I wonder about, you know, what we're enabling with our live stream, right? Certain people, it's easy to say, well, I do best just watching church in my pajamas at home. And so, you know, is that just sort of being the enabling as sort of expressive individualism? Where we're just, what's comfortable for me? What do I like? What makes me feel good? And sort of neglecting some of the larger biblical commands of gathering with other people. I'm glad you're here too. okay. Yeah, so that was, you can think about this. Where do you see it in yourselves? Again, as we said, expressive individualism is not always bad, but it can be bad if you take it to an extreme where you ignore some of the larger context, where you're not willing to be corrected, where you see yourself, as you said, just sort of free floating. Okay, so let's look a bit about what the Bible has to say about self and identity. Again, we could spend a lot of time on this, but I just want to point out. So Genesis 1:27, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. What does that tell us about our identity?
That God made it, and we're a reflection of him, and also, if you think about science, it's in our DNA.
In our DNA.
And I think that this is part of what is leading to what people are, why people are figuring out who they are, is because they're realizing that, you know, I was born this way. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, I part of who I am is my DNA affected how my brain is set up, and so that's one of the reasons I think that our society has gone in this direction, is because we're realizing that part of who we are is how God has woven us together in our DNA, and they may not recognize the God part, but it's part of who we are. Mm-hmm.
So this is part of who God made us, yeah. You talked about, God made us, our identity is defined for us, right? And so I think that's one of the key things that's different from the world, where they sort of feel free-floating, I'm just something and I need to figure out who I am, to the biblical idea of you are a creation. You are a creation, and your identity was given to you by God. You are made in his image. As we're getting into the whole idea of sex and sexuality and gender through this class, it's really interesting. Like, you go back right to the very beginning, and the foundational, one of the foundational things that he says about these people as he creates them, right? They are male and female. And a gender assigned to you is at the foundation of when God creates you and speaks about your identity and place in the universe. Brian.
But if you look in the thinking there also, God created man in his own image. It does not say that he created man to be subservient. You can also look at this and say, man had a desire to be, was created with a desire to be autonomous. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's a bit of, what does it mean to be made in his image? Does it include things like, I'm free, I'm in control? But if you look at the next verse, I know we're running out of time here, but Colossians 1:16, I think helps correct some of that, right? For by him all things were created in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. And I think that helps us put that place in. He created you in his image, male and female. But there is someone in authority over you. You were created by someone for a purpose. And that is where our identity comes from, is it is given to you by God. Now, we're not even getting into here our identity that comes. I think as Kathy was talking earlier about, you're a child of God, right? I mean, so this is really just the created identity. We haven't even gotten into the redemptive identity. But it's saying you were made, and that's where you find your identity, is through who God is and how he made you. Yes?
And part of being made in his image is being made for relationship. Like, he chooses, like, he's the Trinity. He has relationship.
Yes. He made us to be in relationship, and that would be a key part of how we find our identity, which is Truman saying in the past, you would have found your identity in terms of relationships, and some of that is changing. All right, I realize that we're not going to get through very much unless you guys want to stay here for second service. So I want to just mention two things. One thing so you can see where we're headed. I'm going to read the next quote just so you can see how all of this plays into where we're going in the class. So as we talk about expressive individualism, this is where we'll talk about it mostly in the rest of the class, is that expressive individualism is seen most clearly in modern views on sex and sexuality. And so he would say, the sexual revolution does not simply represent a growth in the routine transgression of sexual codes or even a modest expansion of the boundaries of what is and not acceptable behavior, not at all. Rather, it's the repudiation of the very idea of such codes in their entirety. More than that, it has come in certain areas, such as that of homosexuality and transgenderism, to require the positive repudiation of traditional sexual mores to the point where belief in or maintenance of such views has come to be seen as ridiculous and even a sign of serious mental or moral deficiency. If the individual's inner identity is defined by sexual desire, he or she must be allowed to act on that desire in order to be an authentic person. So as we've talked about, identity is now in many ways discovered by looking in to your inner self and then expressing that inner self in a way that society must affirm it. Truman would argue that the number one thing that people look in to find is their sexual identity, their preferences, their desires, those kinds of things, and that is the most significant defining aspect of the modern identity, is a sexual identity. So that is what we'll talk about in the weeks to come. Someone asked about next week. So next week is the men's retreat. So I won't be here. I know a lot of men will not be here. What we're probably going to do is watch a video of Carl Truman doing a chapel message at Masters College, in which he talks about some of these same ideas, so it will supplement what's going on in the course. But if you miss the video, you won't miss the bulk of the course. Pick up some of these things in 2 weeks. But next week will be a video of Truman